Welcome to our podcast. I'm Frank Long, Editorial Director of Rehab Management. The focus of our discussion for this program will be standing systems. And joining us for this podcast is author, speaker, educator, and veteran physical therapist with 19 years of academic and clinical experience in the area of pediatric neurological rehabilitation, Jenny Palig. Jenny, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for allowing me this opportunity to interact with lots of amazing folks.
Jenny, cost seems to be a consideration in at least some way for most medical equipment. Can you tell us what justifies the cost of a standing system?
You can think about this from many different aspects. The biggest one that I think of is quality of life and the ability to be active and participate. So a typical kid is active for about 6 hours a day. A typical toddler is taking 14,000 steps a day. And that makes their muscles healthy, their bones healthy, their brains. It makes their hands work, their hips work, their brains work. Lots of great things happen. So when something interrupts that and kids aren't moving, that has lifelong consequences. It means you have fewer trabeculae and your bones usually aren't as dense. It means you have fewer satellite cells in your muscles, so it's hard to have strong muscles that work well. We know that people that don't move get metabolic disorders like diabetes, their pancreases don't work so well, they get high blood pressure. We see fatty infiltrates in the muscles. You don't breathe so well, your heart's not as strong. So there's lifelong consequences for inactivity. So when something happens and you're not active, we have to use the equipment to kind of substitute that so that you can have more fun and be more active and participate. So for the long term, the standards probably more than make up for the cost of them in healthcare savings, in hospitalizations for pneumonias. Again, this is just, there's no evidence that I know of for this. It's just taking the evidence that we know from what happens when bodies move and are weight bearing and do things, but there's no specific research. So it sort of would be expert opinion. I think we're doing better at getting research on the influence on the bone and the muscles and the hip joints. A simpler correlation might be savings in orthopedic surgeries. So you can stand every day and keep your heel cords and your hamstrings and your hip flexors stretched out, or you can not do that and then have a quick, easy surgery that's going to cost $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And then the last way I think of it sometimes is in terms of Botox and spasticity. We know that standing can really help you maintain your length and decreases spasticity in adults when they're standing. So a vial of Botox is about $800, and then you have the cost of the physician visit and if you have to have anesthesia. So that only lasts 3 months. So it makes more sense to me that you'd get a standard that would last up to 5 years to sort of get those very similar benefits.
Is there a difference between static and dynamic standing? And can you tell us what that difference is?
I'm so glad you asked me that. Let's start with what is static standing. So even though when people see folks standing in standers, we assume that it's not an activity, it actually is. There have been two nice studies that show that your metabolic rate increases when you're standing in a standing device. And your demand for oxygen, your metabolic rate goes up too. So we know that for kids who are limited ambulators or non-ambulators, that standing is actually exercise for them. So we call it static standing, but really it's actually quite active. The word dynamic has been used in so many ways that I think we should just clarify it so we know what's the best thing to think about. Originally, when I first heard the word dynamic standers, it was the description of standers that had big wheels on the side so kids could move around on their own. A few people actually added power to standers so you could drive them with a joystick. And people have actually put some assist wheels on some standers so that there's power assist in moving the standers. As far as I know, there was never any research done on those sorts of standers to show that the child themselves was dynamic and weight shifting. It was just that they could use their upper extremities to get around. That seems like a really good solution to me because we know that children need to move and explore their environment and that it's just so important to have independent, efficient mobility for language, cognition, math, socialization. So we know it's a great idea. We also know that funding for that is really tricky. Funders see those big wheelchair wheels and they want to code it the same as a wheelchair. And they don't think that children should need a sitting mobility device as well as a standing mobility device. So those were hard to fund in some places. Although I think that if people were to understand that you get the benefits of standing and the benefits of mobility, that it's actually the better way to go. It's sort of like someone giving you a Porsche and then forgetting to give you the keys. So those are really nice. And then lately we have different types of dynamic standers. We have one company that came out with a stander where your feet stay in the same place, but your body can sway side to side or front and back and make a whole circle. And the idea of that was that the child would be able to lean over and then get themselves back up and therefore sort of strengthen their trunk and maybe learn about balance and equilibrium. The problem is, at least the kids in my care, a lot of them would just flop to the side and get stuck there and not really get back up. But it was a great idea. And a couple of companies took it a little further. And there are now a couple of standing devices where you actually play video games by shifting in the stander. So one of the devices does it when you dorsi and plantar flex your foot. So it's really working on ankle control. And another device does it with the side to side. And then there's a newer product on the market just in the last 2 years that doesn't play a video game, but you can shift your weight front to back or side to side, depending on how you set it up in the stander. So I think that probably makes more sense to be called a dynamic stander when you can move your body in the stander and it helps you sort of get in and out of standing. You just have to be careful in those that you can get the position you want. So the standers that we call dynamic with the big wheels, you really can't get a lot of abduction out of those. You can't get a lot of postural control there, especially if kids have contractures. It's hard to configure those well. And then the ones that are playing video games that are doing weight shifting are probably for more kids that are at GMFCS level 4 or 3 or 2 and are more active and you're working on those sorts of skills.
Are there positive documented orthopedic studies that have been conducted as a result of a standing program?
Again, we have to define terms. So positive, I will think that you probably mean very strong evidence. And in pediatric rehab overall, we don't have a lot of large, greater than 100 randomized double-blind studies. They're really difficult to do because it's not a homogeneous population. You know, every kid that needs a stander is different. So those studies are harder to do. Some people have been sort of playing around with what the right measures should be. We've got lots of different systems for measuring evidence and measuring the quality of evidence. Most people use GRADE. There's a new system out by GLEG, which is specific for pediatric rehab, which I think is more applicable because it lets you get to that strong evidence. So if we were to use GRADE, I think people don't always agree on how to measure the quality of articles. And when people do systematic reviews, they commonly only look at level 1, 2, and 3 studies. The 3 systematic study reviews that we published on standing, we looked at the GRADE literature as well. So the level 4 and 5 studies, because sometimes those are the more meaningful studies. So for instance, for bone mineral density, we've got 2 studies that never were published, but they were by reputable researchers and they were really good clinical questions. How long do you need to stand for and how often? So Snyder and Katz found that you had to stand for 7.5 hours a week to improve bone mineral density. And Wayne Stuberg and Stacy DeYoung found out that you had to stand for 1 hour a day at school to maintain your bone mineral density over summer break. If you only stood for 30 minutes, you wouldn't. So they're not published, so they're considered level 5 studies, but they're really well-constructed studies that give us really good information. So it really depends on how you measure them. But if you're going to do a Cochrane review right now, you would have to say, we just don't know. We don't have enough high-level, large, randomized, double-blind studies to say what the benefits are. I think one of the nice things in the last 2 years are 2 systematic reviews that just looked at abduction. And both of those studies came up with, they can't make strong recommendation, but the trend is sort of to give it a try. And then the last article I would draw attention to is a study that looked at a systematic review on range of motion that actually concluded that standing was good for bone mineral density. So I think everybody would probably agree that it's better to stand versus not standing for bone mineral density, range of motion. And I think then there's less agreement on for children for spasticity and hip health. And for adults, I think there's more agreement on spasticity and mental health quality of life issues.
Let's turn our focus to getting people to stand at home. What are some ways to ensure family compliance with a standing and or a walking program?
Make it fun and make it functional. So try to embed it in a naturally occurring family routine. For standing, probably the secret is not to do it all at one time, even though we have no evidence that you can get the benefit of standing by not doing it all at one time. People find for convenience sake, it's much better to do bouts, so shorter sessions. So let's say we're going for standing an hour a day. Maybe we can do a half an hour at school and then half an hour at home. The time that I think is best is right after school, because typical kids are most active right after school. And the research tells us that kids with cerebral palsy are actually least active right after school. They sort of go home and sit on the couch and play video games. So you still get to play video games because that's a natural routine, but now you've got to do it in your stander. Walking again should be a natural routine. Maybe walking from the school bus to your house. Maybe there's some other family routine. Maybe folks like to go to the shopping mall. But the key to all of this stuff is embedding it in life so that it happens naturally. So it's not therapy time. It's just fun time and peer interaction time and activity and participation time.
What are some of the physical benefits associated with standing?
Again, we think of the big ones as being bone mineral density. We know that from one study that kids that stood had a fourfold decrease in pathological fractures. So we really know, and the American Academy of Cerebral Palsy Care Pathway for osteoporosis recommends standing as well. So I think the number one thing people usually think about is bone strength. It's also really good for muscle length, helps us with contracture. We've got some really nice studies out of Sweden showing us that the stretch that you get in a stander, you are actually best aligned in a stander than any other place that you usually spend your day, like a wheelchair or in bed or in your walker. Standing, we can get the best alignment. We know that if we're trying to stretch your muscles, you need 4 hours of passive stretch when you're not weight bearing. But it looks like you only need 45 to 60 minutes, depending on your GMFCS level, to get the same amount of stretch in your muscles when you're weight bearing. So we think it's really good for that. We've got some evidence that it decreases spasticity. We've got some nice evidence that it makes it easier and less painful for you to poop. People seem to be happier in their standers. In terms of evidence, we don't have a lot of information on activity and participation and how standing increases that.
What suggests to us that a person who uses a standing system will get those physical benefits?
You have to use a valid and reliable outcome measure. So because most of the recommendations, if you measure them using these evidence rating scales, come out as yellow, you have to measure. So you have to use the goal attainment scaling or COPM or PD or some. You've got to set a goal and then you've got to measure and make sure that you're getting there. So there's so many interventions that we use as pediatric PTs and OTs and speech therapists that are yellow evidence. So you have to measure. You have to make sure that you're getting what you want. So you've got to take range of motion measurements every 6 months and make sure that you're increasing range of motion. You've got to use a pain scale like the FLAC scale to measure bowel care and bowel care time and make sure that it's improving it.
We've been speaking with Jenny Palig. I want to thank you for joining us, Jenny, and for sharing this important information about standing systems.
Thanks so much for this opportunity. Great talking with you, Frank.